So good morning, church.
Morning.
I pray that God speaks deeply into your spirit this morning in a very special way. I love our purpose statement that why we exist, leading people to become fully devoted followers of Jesus. I love that statement, but I love it not so much just so that we can memorize it. I love it so that we can do more than memorize, that we can actually live it out. I want us to live and love like Jesus. I don't want to play church. I want to be the church, and I pray that that is your desire as well. So if you have a Bible with you this morning, I'm going to encourage you to go to a couple of places. I want you to go to Matthew chapter 9 and Luke chapter 10. Matthew chapter 9 and Luke chapter 10. Over and over and over, we find Jesus doing three things a lot. I mean, he does all kinds of things, right? But over and over, we find him doing three specific things over and over and over. And then, what does he do? He says, do what I do. Right? Seems simple, right? But I think it's important for us to know our role as followers of Jesus. What is our role? Like, why are we here? And so to set that stage, I want to tell you a little story. Obviously, it's a made-up story, so don't go like, milk say, right? But a little story to help us get the understanding of why we exist. What's our role? So upon getting back to heaven after his ascension, the angel Gabriel met Jesus and said, well, Lord, did you accomplish your mission of saving the world? And Jesus said, well, yes and no. I modeled a godly life for some 30 years. I attracted a few thousand Jews to follow me. I died to pay the sin debt of the world. I kicked the end out of a borrowed tomb and rose from the grave to prove to a bunch of frightened disciples that I really am who I say I am. I gave them my Holy Spirit to finish the task. And Gabriel said, so you left this whole thing in the hands of a bunch of misfits? To which Jesus replied and said, yep. Gabriel said, well, what are you going to do if they fail? What's plan B? And Jesus replied and said, there is no plan B. Ladies and gentlemen, we're it. We are plan A and there is no plan B. The local church is the hope of the world. In fact, I want you to say that with me because you're a little quiet this morning. All right? Let's say that together. The local church is the hope of the world. One more time. The local church is the hope of the world. I believe it is. So how do we do this? How do we live in such a way that the world may know? I contend we follow the example of Jesus. Matthew chapter 9 in verse 35. Matthew chapter 9 in verse 35. Jesus traveled through all the towns and villages of that area, teaching in the synagogues and announcing the good news about the kingdom. And he healed every kind of disease and illness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were confused and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. He said to his disciples, the harvest is great, but the workers are few. So pray to the Lord who is in charge of the harvest. Ask him to send more workers into his fields. Again, this morning I contend that Jesus did three things repetitively, specifically, very, very well. The first thing is this. The first thing he did was Jesus saw people. Very simple. Jesus saw people. A blind man was once asked, what was his most difficult struggle to overcome in life? Can I tell you something? It wasn't blindness. He said the most difficult struggle that he faced was that people saw him as blind. He said, I don't want people to see me as blind. I just want people to see me. I want them to see me for who I really am. And I contend that's the story of most people that we see every day. They just want to be seen for who they really are. Helen Keller was asked if blindness was the world's greatest tragedy. She said, oh no, no. She said, the world's greatest tragedy is have seeing eyes and still not see. See, people are all around us. Every day, people are all around us, and we have no clue they're even there. Jesus saw people. A man went into the metro train station in Washington, D.C. one day. It was a cold January morning, and he took out his violin and began playing his violin in the train station. It was about noon in January, and so based on these statistics, it was kind of estimated that probably several thousand people walked by during this short time that this gentleman played his violin. He stayed for 45 minutes playing his violin. After a few minutes of playing, a gentleman slowed his walk and he stopped. And he took it in for a moment, but then hurried on to where he was going. A few minutes later, a lady came by and she slowed her pace and she dropped a dollar into his violin case and she kept going. A few minutes later, another gentleman came walking by and he slowed his pace and he must have recognized he had a big smile on his face and took it in for a second, but then kept on about his business. The only people that really seemed to stop and take it in were children. But each time the child would stop, the mother or father would grab their hands and go and scoop them away. In that 45 minutes that the musician played, only 6 people actually stopped. 20 people left money in his violin case, totaling $32. $32 in 45 minutes, not a bad wage. But when it was all over, and he put his violin back in the case and walked away, no one really noticed. No one thanked him, no one applauded. The man who was playing that violin was a man named Joshua Bell, perhaps the greatest violinist of all time. He played some of the most intricate pieces of music during that 45 minutes with his own instrument that today is valued at over $3.5 million. Interestingly, just 2 days earlier, he played a sold-out theater in Boston, Massachusetts with tickets selling for well over $100 a seat. And I say all that to say this, I wonder how many violinists we pass by every single day. I wonder how many people that are hurting that we pass by every single day and we don't even notice. You see, Jesus saw people. Do you? Do you really see people? Like, maybe it's your neighbor next door. Oh, he's so grumpy. Wonder why. Do you see people? Maybe it's the person that bags your groceries. Maybe it's the person that gets your favorite latte at the coffee shop. Maybe it's the person that works in the cubicle next to you. Maybe it's that family member sitting right next to you. Jesus saw people. So here's what I want us to do. I want to make a few challenges with y'all today. The first one is this. From this day forward, I want to challenge you to see rather than be seen. I mean, truth of the matter is we all want to be seen, right? We all want to be noticed. That's what I said earlier. People just want people. They just want to be seen for who they really are. But if we're so focused on everybody seeing us, then are we really going to have time to see others? But if we actually take time to see others, then others are doing that same thing. They'll be the ones seeing us. So I want to challenge us. It's a big undertaking. But I'd like for us to start with us. Instead of insisting on being seen, hey, look at me, I want us to focus on seeing others like Jesus. Really see people. So number one, Jesus saw people. Number two, Jesus had compassion. Jesus had compassion. In our text, we see that it says that Jesus, when he saw the people, he had compassion on them. That Greek word for compassion is in this case, and in at least five other places in the Word of God, an action word, a verb. In other words, when Jesus saw people, he acted on it. He took action. He cared. For what good is it if we do number one, we see people, but we really don't care? Share a story about a true story about a missionary woman that was sitting in her second floor apartment reading her mail. And she was had her chair where she often sat reading, where she could see out into the city street, and right below her was this gentleman, disheveled, standing, leaning against the light pole right below her window. She opened up her mail, and it was a letter from home. And when she opened the envelope, a crisp $100 bill came out of the letter. And she was like, oh, wow. God's timing is so perfect. Like, I really have a good home for this $100 right about now. And she was praising God and thanking him for his gift. And she opened up the letter, and as she was reading the letter from home, she couldn't help but become distracted by this man leaning against the light pole directly below her, and seeing how he was dressed and his demeanor and his appearance, she couldn't help but thinking, that guy probably needs this money more than I do. So she finished reading the letter from home. She grabbed an envelope and she tucked the $100 bill into the envelope, and then she wrote on the outside of it, "Don't despair." And she opened her window, and she got the gentleman's attention and motioned that she was going to drop the envelope. So she dropped the envelope, and he picked it up and opened it up and saw the $100 and saw what she had written on the outside, "Don't despair." And he tipped his hat and walked away. She felt really, really good that she saw the man and she had compassion. A verb, an action word. She took action to help this guy. Next day, she was getting ready to leave her apartment, and there was a knock on her door, and she opened it up, and there was the same man wearing the same clothes, and he handed her this stack of bills. And she's like, "What is this?" He said, "It's your winnings. $600. Don't Despair was a 5-1 winner at the track." Jesus did say, give and it would be given to you, right? Probably not what Jesus meant. Okay? Definitely not what Jesus meant, but it's still funny nonetheless. The point of the story was this woman didn't just see the need. She had compassion. She turned it into a verb, an action, and she helped this gentleman. The point of it all was that she saw and she acted upon what she saw. Question: do we? Now let's jump forward to our other text in Luke chapter 10. And I'm going to read starting in verse 30. Luke chapter 10 in verse 30. I can hear some. I'd like to hear more. But I can hear some pages turning. It's good. It's a good sound. I love it. Luke chapter 10 and verse 30. Jesus replied with a story. A Jewish man was traveling on a trip from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he was attacked by bandits. Let's pause there for a moment. This man was on a journey going to somewhere to do something that was important to him. That's the case with each and every one of us. I gotta be honest. There's times I get on the road and I see a car in front of me doing a full 18 miles an hour in a 55 mile an hour zone. And I'm thinking, God, could you remove this person from my road? Right? Anybody been there? And sometimes I just think, like, sometimes people are just a distraction. But we all have to remember that every one of us in our journey is on our way to somewhere to do something that's important to us also. Don't forget that, okay? Let's keep reading. So, a Jewish man was traveling on a trip from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he was attacked by bandits. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him up, and left him half dead beside the road. Now here's this guy who is on his way to somewhere to do something that was important to him, but he never made it to his destination because someone invaded his life, his world. Permit me to embellish. Maybe it was a parent who told their son that he was worthless. He was never going to amount to anything in life. Maybe it was a young boy that seduced her with flowery words and gifts and the word love only to get what he was looking for and then left her to feel alone and dirty. Maybe it was someone you considered to be a really good friend and they stuck one right in your back. Maybe it's the loss of a loved one. Here's the deal. The world is filled with people who have been beat up, bruised, bleeding, lying in a ditch on the side of the road, waiting to die. Verse 31. By chance, a priest came along. But when he saw the man lying there, he crossed to the other side of the road and passed him by. A temple assistant walked over and looked at him lying there, but he also passed by on the other side. What a sad, sad commentary, isn't it? I mean, Jesus didn't say that some evil, bad dude, narcissistic, self-focused, self-centered, saw that, said no thanks, went to the other side. No. Church people. Right? And not only church people, a pastor and an elder of all people. And the question is, why? This happens all the time. I'm not just talking about church people. I'm just talking about this situation. It happens all the time. And the question is, why? Why do people just walk by? I've got an answer for you, as you probably thought. Can I tell you my personal opinion of why? Because for so many of us, we feel that where we're going and what we're doing is more important than what they're going through. It's just true. You square with that however you want. One day you'll have to square it with him. We feel that where we're going and what we're doing is more important than what others are going through. That's why people walk by. Now, I'm not saying you do that. Pretty sure you probably don't. So maybe I'm preaching to the choir. But why does this happen so much in our world? Because people think that what they're doing and where they're going is more important than what others are going through. That's the problem in our world today. Let's keep reading. Then a despised Samaritan, say despised Samaritan, came along, and when he saw the man, he felt compassion for him. You know what? I'll bet that that despised Samaritan was on his way to go somewhere to do something that was important to him as well. I'm pretty sure he didn't wake up that morning, you know what, I've got this big presentation that could make me millions, but I'm just hoping that I run across some dude lying, bleeding, half dead in a ditch somewhere that's going to take me off course and cause me to miss my meeting. I'm pretty sure he didn't think that. Keep reading. Going over to him, the Samaritan soothed his wounds with olive oil and wine and bandaged them. Then he put the man on his own donkey, which means he had to walk, and took him to an inn where he took care of him. Let's just pause there and just dig that up a little bit. He didn't just go, whoa, let me pray for you. Right? He took care of him. He anointed him. He took care of his wounds. He bandaged him. He put him on his donkey, so he walked all the way, wherever it was. Maybe it was a block. I don't know. But he walked to the inn. And then it says, he didn't just go like, okay, I don't have time for this guy, right? He took care of him. And then when he finally had to go, so he stayed with him all through the night. Okay, let's keep reading. Where he took care of him. The next day, he spent the whole night caring for this man. Just changing his bandages, whatever was needed. He cared for him all night long. The next day, he handed the innkeeper 2 silver coins. Uh-oh, now he's getting into his pocketbook. 2 silver coins, telling him, take care of this man. If his bill runs higher than this, I'll pay you the next time I'm here. Do you see all the things he could have not done? You see all the things he did do? I need you to hear this. The natural response of someone who has been born again in the Spirit of God. Did you soak that in? Did you just take that breath? The natural response of someone who has been born again with God's Spirit, that has Jesus living on the inside, the natural response is for us to be more giving, more loving, more compassionate, more caring. Where are you? Are you really compassionate, caring, loving? So, along with the first challenge of choosing to see rather than be seen, challenge number 2 is that from this day forward, I encourage you, I challenge you to care rather than being cared for. And we all want to be cared for. I do. I know when I'm sick, I want Maddie to care for me, make me soup. You know, back hurt, she massaged my shoulder, she got all these essential oils. I mean, I want her to care for me all the time. I'm needy. Right? But who's going to care for her? Right? Isn't that kind of like what, you know, Jesus paints this picture of marriage, you know, like that it's a reciprocating relationship, that as I care for her, she's... So can't we do that with the family of God as well? Instead of focusing on like, hey, who's going to care for me? Nobody can care for me, I'm not going to care for you. Where is that getting us besides the same place we've been getting for the last couple generations? Maybe many. So I'm going to challenge you. Let's not focus on being seen. Let's see people, really see people. And let's focus on not necessarily people caring for us, but us caring for them. And the third thing Jesus did, Jesus met their needs. Jesus met their needs. Comes right to the heart of it and meets the needs. The story is told about a retired sociologist, I'm not even going to mention his name, but he traveled the world as an evangelical speaker, sociologist, very popular man. And one time he was speaking at a large women's conference, and the lady, he was sitting at the head table, and the lady that was chairing the organization, the gathering, she decided she was going to read a letter from a female missionary overseas. And so she gets up and she reads this letter. And in it, it's very pointed, it's very clear. This woman is talking about the needs at her location, that she needs money to be able to do this and that and the other thing, right? She's painting a clear picture, praying that God would use people to meet the needs that she has as a missionary overseas. And so painted a very clear picture of what she needed. When she got done reading the letter, she looked at the guest speaker, and she said, "Would you come pray for this missionary woman?" And he shook his head. So the chair of the organization thinks, she's like, he must not have understood what I was saying. So she's like, "Sir, would you come and pray for this woman that we just read about in this missionary letter?" He stood up and he said no. And he asked to see the letter, and he kind of skimmed over it. And he says, "Honestly, nowhere in this letter does this woman ask for prayer. She needs money." And he pulled out his wallet and he emptied it into a basket. And then he handed the basket to the woman. A little... probably embarrassed and reluctant, she walked over to her chair with her purse, and she put in money, and they passed the basket around the whole room, and by the time the basket came back in, there was twice as much money in what she had been asking for. The speaker then got up and said this: "How dare we ask God for something he has already supplied in us?" Now, please, do not go sideways with that message, okay? Do not go sideways. It's recorded, so I will play it back. Okay? Do not go sideways with this message and make it into something that's not. I believe in the power of God. I believe in the power of prayer. And I believe we ought to be praying at all times, all situations, all circumstances, right? I believe prayer changes things. Amen? But I'm amazed sometimes at how we can hide behind prayer and not meet the needs of the people around us. I'm amazed at how we can go through the drive-thru, spend $20 on ice cream, and don't bat an eye. But when that $20 goes into the offering, how big that $20 looks then? Can someone explain that to me? Jesus saw people. Jesus had compassion. Jesus met their needs. People really need to see Jesus in us today. They do. So along with the other two challenges that I've made today, here's the third one. From this day forward, make the decision to give rather than to get. To give rather than to get. Listen, I don't want Birchridge to be this church where you leave here feeling all warm and fuzzy, that I tickled your ears, you checked a box, and you wave and smile and say, see you next week. I don't. I want us to live and love like Jesus. I want to intentionally challenge you to really see people this week. Deliberately look into people's eyes and see people. And I want you to care. For what good is it to see people if we don't care? I want you to care for people. And I want you to make the decision to do what you can with what you have to meet the needs of those people around you. Remember, God calls us to commitment, not comfort. I'm praying you'll join me in that. Let's pray together.